Maharshi Raman and J. Krishnamurti were others who influenced him. Soon enough, however, he rejected all such influences, beginning a relentless course of corrosive questioning of all authority. At the age of 49, he went through a profound mental and physical catharsis, a mini physiological atomic explosion, as he calls it, that left him, he later claimed, miraculously cleansed of all overimpositions of thought and culture. Since then, Yuji has lobbed cynical grenades at every citadel of authority and convention. For him, there are no gods, no guru, no religion, no striving, no solace, no redemption. He is the ultimate non-guru, a kind of cosmic Naxalite, who ruthlessly demystifies spiritualism, but claims he has no panacea to offer. For a person who says he has no questions and no answers to give, it is surprisingly easy to talk to him, and it is indeed a privilege to have you, sir, with us in the studio. Yuji, you say you have no solutions, no answers, no formulas. Why did you agree to give this interview?
Because you are the only medium through which I can express myself. And I have felt for some time very strongly that those who have been coming to see me all these 20 or odd years, I should say, have been interested in moksha, liberation, freedom, transformation, and all kinds of such things. And anything I say has unfortunately will be misinterpreted as something to do with the same thing that they have been interested in. I have failed to put across what I have been trying to say to all those who come to see me, that it has no religious, spiritual or mystical content in what I have come into. And it is only a pure and physical and physiological functioning of this body that I am left with. So there is no way they can understand what I am trying to say, because it is impossible for them to listen to anything without interpreting what I am saying within the framework of their own religious thinking. So I decided, when one friend suggested, why don't you go public, as they put it, and try your luck with the media. And my going public is not born out of any interest or desire on my part to become famous or any such thing. But television and radio, they are very powerful media through which I can express myself. So what is the motivation behind my accepting your invitation or the invitations of the people around the globe is, that maybe somebody somewhere who is listening to this program or similar programs will get the hang of what I am trying to say.
If in the course of personal interaction with people who have been naturally drawn to what you are saying, even if they have not fully comprehended it, if in that course you say you have failed to convey your point of view, do you think the media, which is a more impersonal medium than direct interaction?
Actually, the media in the United States and other Western countries are not interested in what I am saying. They are entertainers, you see. Their interest is to put across to their audiences. But strange enough, some of them get involved with what I am saying, you know. Uh-huh. Although I believe that they are not interested, actually not interested in what I am saying, but just to put across to their audiences. Most of the time, they themselves get involved, personally involved, in what I try to put across using that medium as a medium of my expression. Really, I don't have any way of expressing myself. You may not believe if I say that there is no impetus. Is that the correct way of pronouncing the word? Even to say something or express myself. But I'm trying, you see, to put across and emphasize and even overemphasize sometimes that my attempt to understand myself and the world around me through the religious thinking of man for centuries left me in a hopeless situation. Somehow through some luck or strange chance, something hit me and freed me from the totality of man's thoughts, feelings and experiences. So what I am left with is something which is totally different from everybody thought, felt and experienced before. One thing that interested in my life, very young I should say, in my interest to pursue these matters, why they always tell me what I should want, what I should think. This was my basic question. Anything I want is what they wanted me to want. Anything I think is what they wanted me to think. And is there anything other than what they want me to want? What is it that I want? What I want is what, not what they wanted me to want, what they wanted me to think. But it never occurred to me what I want is no different from the wants they wanted me to want. I had no way of resolving this dilemma or the problem. Nobody helped me. Anybody that tried, for whatever reason, tried to help me, left me with this tremendous problem of finding out for myself and by myself, what is it that I want? But it never occurred to me, this want is no different from any other want or the wants they wanted me to want. I had no way of finding the answer for myself. And nobody helped me. So when I rejected all the external authority of everybody, I just rejected, but still this haunted me. What is it that I want? What is it that I want? So anybody that comes to see me, I throw this question at him. What is it that you want? What do you want? And nobody comes out with a clear demand, this is what I want. So something hit me like a lightning or the shaft of a lightning, and that finished the whole thing for me. So what I am left with is something very difficult to put across or even give expression to it. But whatever I want to say can be expressed very easily. And I don't need a rich vocabulary for 300-400 words are enough to put across what I am trying to put across.
So you said freedom, if you like such a cliched word, came to you by chance. A shaft of lightning at the end of a very excruciating search for answers to questions.
Yes.
Can people depend on that chance? Or is there a craving for whatever you have, call it peace, rest, joy, at-easiness, if you can describe it like that. Can it be left to the sheer chance that it happened to you?
All the words you are using are not the words that can describe what I am left with.
Is there some way to describe it?
Not a way, but what I found was there is nothing there to be free from. Not from this, that or the other. What I am left with is there anything that I want to be free from? But I never said to myself that I am a free man. But so there is no question of my trying to free others.
But at the end of this, are you at peace with yourself?
Am I at peace with myself? The question of peace does not at all arise in me. So I can't say that I am at peace with myself, because I knew that whatever I did in my quest for finding out the truth, reality, or whatever you want, disturbed the peace that was already there. There is a tremendous peace there in us, and our idea of a peace and the pursuit of that peace disturbed the peace that was already there.
But so you've dispensed with the search, yes, because now you have it. All the questions have ceased because in one cataclysmic moment you have found the questions redundant, even irrelevant.
I don't think I have found the answers for the questions. But what I am left with is a very strange situation where I do not have any questions. I don't ask questions except the questions I need to ask to function in this world sanely and intelligently. Otherwise, I don't have questions of any kind.
Sir, while you may not have questions, you certainly have comment. And that comment is a denial of all that is conventionally considered to be prescribed authority or tradition or religion or whatever you may call it. Don't you think it's more easy to deny than to assert something which is not a product of denial, but something independent on its own?
I do not deny things just for the sake of denying. My interest is to point out to those who come up with all these questions, the questions that they throw at themselves and the questions that they throw at me, do not seem to realize or understand that the questions are born out of the answers they already have. Difficult to understand that. They don't understand this because any answer, if there is any answer to the questions which they throw at me, is not really the answer for them. If it is an answer to their question, the question should go. But they keep asking the questions. What is involved here is that they are not ready to accept the fact that all the questions are born out of the answers they already have, and they do not want an answer for that question. If what I say is the answer for their question, the question should disappear, and along with it, the answer for a particular question or the answers that have been given to us from generations also will disappear. And then the sentimentality comes into the picture, and they dare not brush aside the answers which you have taken for granted that they are the answers given by those who knew all those answers. So those who are responsible for the answers also will go. That's really the crux of the problem for them. Actually, they do not want any answers for their questions. The same is true of the problems. We really do not have any problems. And what is difficult for us to realize is that it is the solutions that have created the problems. We have tremendous faith in these solutions because those who have offered these solutions cannot be wrong, you know. So we have invested tremendous faith in those people who have given these solutions. We never question the solution. So what the problem is, not the problem, but the solution. So we are not ready to discard the solutions. If one solution fails, we like look around for solutions from different
places. Let us damn the solution.
Yes.
And let us also question the fact that those who ask are not prepared to accept answers.
But what is involved in brushing aside the answers is not only the teachers who have given us the answers, but what you call you, the you as you know yourself, the you as you experience yourself, is involved in that. If the answer disappears, what you call you also goes with it. So that is a frightening situation. That is all that they have, the you as you know yourself and the you as you experience yourself. And the only way they can maintain the identity, you or I, as the case may be, is through the constant repetition of experiencing the same thing over and over again. And they are not ready for that kind of a thing. It is a frightening situation. Even if they are ready, brush aside, what they are left with is the frightening situation, the fear. So fear is the one thing which they do not want to be free from. Any attempt, any therapy, any technique anybody has offered to us only strengthens and fortifies that fear. So if you ask the people, are you ready to be free from fear? They say that they are ready to be free from fear. And what is left there is fear, and they do not want to be free from fear. The fear of not getting what they want and the fear of losing what they have. But actually, the fear of not getting what you want and the fear of losing what you do not want to lose is one single thing.
Quite right. Yes. But there are questions, sir, which remain however inadequate the questioner, or however ill-prepared he may be to face the answer. Why, for instance, are we born and why do we die?
You see, those questions are born out of the demand to find out the cause of everything. That is natural, that is an integral part of thinking. All human thinking is born out of the demand to know the cause of everything.
Is that demand wrong? That is,
I don't say it is wrong, but it is a cultural input. And there is no relationship between the cause and effect at all. The metaphysicians in India might say that the cause is effect and effect is the relationship. And I ask many people, why do you come to see me? What I am saying is something totally different from what you believe. So their answer is, we want to find out the cause of whatever happened to you. We are interested in what you are saying. We want to know the cause of it. They are interested in finding out the cause of it for the simple reason that they want this kind of a thing to make it happen to them. But this is something which cannot be made to happen through any volition of yours or any effort of yours. And so I tell them, whatever you want, you can get it, but this is something you cannot want because you do not know what it is. So what you do not know, you cannot experience, so you just forget about it. But still, their interest is to find out the cause of everything so that they can make it happen. My interest is to point out that whatever happened to me, if you are lucky enough to happen, it will be totally different. So whatever existed before cannot touch what I have come into. I do not say that I'm an extraordinary man. Nobody else has come into this kind of a thing. But it doesn't interest me. But if you are lucky, I tell the people who come to see me, to touch life at a point where nobody touched before, you will be the one that will make this obsolete. So whatever existed before me has become obsolete for me because I touch life at a point where nobody touched before. So this is something which is very difficult to put across because anything that you say is captured within the framework of their own experiencing structure, and that is dead.
But this experience, which can be unique to you and to somebody else in different ways, can it provide the same kind of implosion that has happened to you?
It will be in the nature of an explosion. I use that word explosion for want of a better and more adequate way of expressing it. But it will happen in quite a different way. And I don't know what he will say, how he will put these things, but it will be something unique and something different from everything that everybody has said before.
So there is this natural state of the body. There are different ways you've expressed it in different interviews that you've given, that you have extolled. How is it different to the more conventional labels of nirvana, mukti, moksha? I know you've begun to smile, so the very fact of my using these labels is perhaps blasphemous in the context of what you say. But how is it different?
It is not different, but there is no point in using those words anymore. For example, the word nirvana means blow up. I don't know if I am right, but anyway, that's what I understand. So it has not actually and factually blown up everything. If it has, as it should, you are left with something totally different. And what you are left with is something which cannot be captured, contained, and given expression to. In any way, in any attempt on your part to express it is bound to fail. It's just like a tree that is there. What you will do with it, you can sit under the tree and in the shade and protect yourself. Cut it into pieces and use that, you see, as a burning fuel. What you do with it is not its interest. So in exactly the same way, what I say may not have any relevance to you or to anybody or to the world at large. But it comes out, this is what I have found. It's totally different from what I was made to believe, what I was made to
think. True, sir. But one of your findings is that the body liberated from the over-imposition.
The stranglehold of thought.
A stranglehold of thought.
Now, so what you are left with is a tremendous living organism with an extraordinary intelligence of its own. When once the thought cannot control shape, the activity of the functioning of the body, it begins to function with an extraordinary intelligence of its own. It is quite different from the intellect which we have acquired. But what I want to emphasize is that the body is not interested in learning anything, not interested in knowing anything from us. So then the expression of that life will take care of every problem, individual problem. So in the ultimate analysis, I must say this, that what has happened to me cannot be fitted into any value system. It has no value for me. This is not something which I can sell. This is not something which I can put across and use to convert people into my way of thinking or into my way of experiencing things. Since it has no value for me, it has no value for the world at all.
So, even if we concede that, this question, if I may persist with the very strangled hold of thought, now there is in Hindu metaphysics, in Vedantic metaphysics, the analysis of thought, intellect, mind, ego, ahankar, whatever you may call it, which is a stumbling block, either to what exists or what you are striving for.
Yes.
In what sense then is what you are saying a break away from this tradition?
What they failed to emphasize is that thought can create problems, but that is not the instrument to help us to solve the problem. How this dawned on me is something I do not know, and I have no way of communicating to others.
Neti, neti. You know that old slogan?
I understand.
Slogan,
yes.
Where thought is unable to comprehend, thought is an inadequate instrumentality, thought is an obstacle to that search. So if I may say so, it is a continuation of a certain tradition in metaphysics, in Hindu philosophy at least.
Yes.
And to the extent that I am able to understand you, you have brought it into greater emphasis, but not completely denied this devaluation of thought.
No, I have not brushed aside the thought totally, because it's a very powerful instrument and we need it. And what we fail to understand here is that we use thought to achieve goals which are totally unrelated to the way the thought is operating. And this, the neti neti doctrine you refer to, is a gimmick which we have discovered, found, to achieve our goal. Whatever is the goal,
which is
Brahman, or God, truth, reality, or whatever you want to call. And so that goal is created by this thought. The thought does not want to come to an end.